The Senate Judiciary Committee to order. The time is now 1:33 p.m. on Wednesday, February 11, 2026. Before we begin, I want to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Doug Bridges from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Senator Tilton, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. The first and only item on our agenda is a presentation on the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission's 2025 report. Here to present that report is Suzanne DiPietro, Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, and the Judicial Council staffs the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission. Ms. DiPietro, if you would please come forward, put yourself on the record, you can begin your presentation. And I would note, if you do have questions, get my attention. We figure we can interrupt her as needed.
Thank you, Chair Klayman. My name is Suzanne DiPietro. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, and by virtue of that role, I serve as staff to the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Analysis Commission. The commission was created 2022, and the commission really is the purpose of the commission is to look at trends and efficiencies and procedures in the criminal justice system and report those to the legislature and the governor and the public. And every year in November, the commission submits an annual report, which was submitted to you. And Chair Klayman has asked me to come and tell you a little bit about what's in that annual report. So I'm going to have to figure out how to work these slides. Okay, great. So as I mentioned, the commission is established in statute. There are 16 members. I want to tell you that the commission is really a very, it's a very interdisciplinary commission. So if we've got members of the judiciary, we've got members of the executive branch, all the criminal justice agencies in the executive branch are represented there. Not all of them, but OPA does not have a representative, but the main agencies in the criminal justice executive branch agencies are represented, and then, of course, the legislative branch also. So it's a good group to be able to look at these problems from a variety of different perspectives, and that's exactly what they do. This report is large. This report is over 100 pages, and there are so many things that I could talk about. But I'm not going to talk about everything in the report. I'm sure you will be relieved to hear. But I've pulled out some topics that I've listed here on the screen for you that I thought might be of interest for today. Take a look at those topics. If there's something you're interested in that's not listed there, I would love to hear about it. I'll try to work it into my presentation. And also, I do welcome questions. I really want to talk about what you're interested in. So I welcome questions at any time during the presentation. Yes.
Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you. And thank you for being here today. It's lovely to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I do notice on the list of topics for today, we don't cover discretionary parole or mandated parole or geriatric parole. And I did look through the report, and there are some very, what I find troubling, graphs that showcase just some trends that I'd love for us to dig in, especially as we see the cost overruns for our Department of Corrections continue to increase. And what are some mechanisms that we can do to ensure people are, you know, repairing harm, that they're moving toward recidivism, and that we're also being supportive as they reenter communities?
Okay, great. Yeah. So actually, and I can, through the chair, Senator Tobin, I also can tell you that the commission is going to look at doing a little more work on the parole issue, over the upcoming year, because that is something, parole and probation, actually, that is a topic that people are interested in. So I'll try to work that in towards the end, since that's part of the process that happens towards the end of the criminal justice process. So I'm going to kind of start at what I think of as the beginning, which is when a crime is committed, and then move through arrests and citations. That's the law enforcement response. I'm going to talk a little bit about people who are in prison before they've been convicted of anything, because that's something that happens in between the arrest, being arrested sometimes, and having your case processed by the court system. Then I'm going to move to the court process with filings and dispositions, and I'm going to talk just very briefly about time to disposition, because the Chief Justice in her State of the Judiciary today, I thought covered quite well the status of time to disposition in the court system. And then I'll talk a little bit about sentencing and recidivism in that section. I'll try to talk a little bit about some of the information we have from the parole board about parole discretionary parole grant rates.
And Senator Tobin, specific to probation and parole and the data that's in the report, I'm more than happy, if we run out of time today, I'm more than happy to schedule an additional hearing specific to that specific issue, and happy to do that and coordinate with your office to make sure that happens, because almost every item, because I chair this commission, almost every item that's in the report, we sometimes spend a couple of hours on, so.
All right. So the first thing to think about when you're trying to understand what's happening in the criminal justice system is what crime is being reported to law enforcement. And I'll preface this conversation a little bit by talking about what crime might not be reported to law enforcement, because we only have the statistics that we have if people report things to law enforcement. So I just want to kind of put a flag on the fact that not all crimes are reported to law enforcement. And, you know, we can only measure what we can measure. But I always like to say that just to acknowledge that, for example, property crimes are an area where sometimes people don't report to law enforcement. But we have what we have. And so what we have is from the Department of Public Safety, which gathers information from law enforcement agencies throughout the state. And we have a group of offenses that have been chosen to kind of be the best indicators of, you know, what's happening with crime. And so it's called the Part 1 UCR Part 1 offenses. I'm just going to talk briefly about those. Those include both violent and property crimes. And we usually separate those out when we're thinking about crime, because we all sort of, I think, intuitively feel that violent crimes are different in some ways than property crimes. So the first chart that I have for you here is the UCR crimes, part one. And this shows over the years, starting in 2008 and going all the way up to 2024, which was the last data we had when we made this report, the UCR part one violent offenses. So these would include violent crimes such as the ones listed back here, murder, rape, robbery and aggravated assault. And I think there's kind of two takeaways from this chart that has an awful lot of lines and color on it. The first is that, unfortunately, for violent offenses, Alaska's rate of violent offenses reported to law enforcement is still higher than the rate in the United States and has been for a long time. But the other thing that you can see from this chart, second thing you can see is that there's some variation there, some trends. You know, it sort of goes down and then it goes up. And so that's of interest. And then I think on the far right side of the chart, the other interesting thing is that in general, those reports have been going down the last few years. So you see most of those lines, some more than others, are having a little bit of a downward trend. So that's something to look at and, you know, of course, you know, be happy about. But it's something to take note of. And that actually might that comes up. Ties into some things that I'm going to talk about later as well. Here's the same type of chart for property crimes. So again, if you're comparing Alaska to rates of property crimes in the United States, you see that, you know, in some of our communities have higher rates and some have lower rates. But also you can see maybe not perfectly, but a little bit there too, that some of the property crimes are going down a little bit too in these most recent years. So those are crimes that are reported to law enforcement. So then the next question is, what is the response of law enforcement? And so here's some information about the number of arrests and citations that are made by law enforcement. And the Department of Public Safety also keeps track of this information, and we use shares it with us so that the commission can analyze it. So you might not be surprised, since I just showed that some of the reports of crime are going down, that also some of the arrests and citations are going down. In fact, just about everywhere in the state, those have been decreasing, particularly since 2019. There was kind of a peak in 2019, and they've been decreasing since then. But I think the thing that's interesting or helpful to consider when you're thinking about the criminal justice system is how all the activities of all the different components are so related. So you've got the amount of crime, and here we have the law enforcement not making as many arrests, perhaps because there just weren't as many reports of crime, although there could be other reasons as well. Could have to do with staffing. I mean, you know, the statistics, the numbers are the numbers, and the whys behind it are the things that are interesting. So then I just wanted to put this this graph in as well, because a few years ago we had a situation where the number of people in, so after a person is arrested, they're brought to a correctional facility. I should preface it by saying that. And so then we want to look at, okay, of the people in correctional facilities, how many of those are people who've been brought in because they've been arrested and charged, but they haven't been convicted yet? And how many have actually been convicted and are serving a sentence? And we had a situation a few years ago where actually the number of people who hadn't yet been convicted or sentenced were actually more than the number of people who were serving sentences. And so I threw this in to show that that has now, that that sort of topsy-turvy situation has now righted itself, if that's a correct way to describe it. And we see that, in fact, the number of sentenced people is more than the number of people who are awaiting trial and sentencing, which seems like a positive trend. All right, so then after somebody's arrested or cited, there has to be a charging decision, and the charges get filed with the court system. And so here's the next step in the process. Here are some criminal case filings. We divide those out by felonies versus misdemeanors. And how we do that is in a particular case, if one charge is a felony and all the rest are misdemeanors, we characterize that case as a felony. So we characterize it by the single most serious charge in the case, in the court case. And you can see, and maybe this isn't surprising, considering the data I just showed you, that court felony and misdemeanor filings have been going down. And now that's not going to be true for every single court location. These are statewide totals, but and there is, of course, fluctuation year to year here and there. But you can see that in general, we have fewer filings in 2024 than we do in previous years.
Senator Tolbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this might be a question for you or for Ms. DePietro. We heard Chief Justice Carney say a word today that I noted on my pad, which was unclassified. And I think it's often an opportunity for us to educate the public about the different levels and what unclassified means to misdemeanor, the felony. Okay. So either one.
I'm more than happy for Ms. DiPietro to answer your questions.
All right. Through the chair to Senator Tobin, Suzanne DiPietro. So felonies and misdemeanors are categories of crimes. Misdemeanor crimes are crimes that are eligible, that you can be punished with up to 1 year in incarceration, a year or less. And felonies are ones that you can be sentenced to more than a year of incarceration. And there are different kinds of felonies. And so there are unclassified felonies, A felonies, B felonies, and C felonies. And those classification ranges relate to the seriousness of the crime. So the unclassified felonies are the most serious, the kidnapping and murder cases. The A felonies are the next most serious, the B felonies below that. And then the C felonies, which, as the Chief Justice mentioned, are the largest by volume number of felonies that come through the court system, are sort of the quote-unquote least serious felonies, which, of course, a felony is still a felony, so it's still a serious crime. And then misdemeanors, we have A misdemeanors and B misdemeanors. Same idea. The A misdemeanors, the legislature has classified as considered more a little more serious than the B misdemeanors, if that helps. And I should say, I did not say this before, but yes, it is the legislature that makes those classifications and distinctions. So it is the legislature that decides which types of crimes are more serious than others, and also the legislature that sets the sentencing ranges for all the crimes.
Please continue.
All right. So now we've had our filings in the court system, and then those cases have to get processed. And the question is, well, how does it all turn out? And so here's a chart that looks at these felony cases that I was just talking about, and it shows, and this isn't this isn't how all of them resolve, but of the ones that are that resolve with a conviction or a dismissal. So the interesting thing, because you can also be acquitted, that's another way that a felony case can be resolved. So this is an interesting chart to me anyways, because it shows that there's actually a fairly high number of cases that end in dismissal of charges, of all charges. You can see that there are many, many cases that end in a conviction of one or more charges, but many also result in a dismissal. And that relatively large percentage of dismissals is actually something to keep in mind when I talk a little bit later about, for example, recidivism. And then here's the same idea with misdemeanors. You'll see, again, there are quite a few misdemeanors that get dismissed, and there was even a small amount of time recently where more misdemeanors were being dismissed than people were getting convicted. And then this is that some of that same information, just in a different format for people who are more number oriented. And this also adds in the number of cases that are that resulted in an acquittal. And you'll see that that's a very small number, relatively speaking. It's not small to the people who get acquitted.
One question, if you'll turn back to the chart on felonies. It appears in that kind of 2020 through 2022, there's a big spike in dismissals, and then it drops mm-hmm. back again.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any connection to that in the COVID pandemic and some of the dynamics with COVID?
Yeah, to the chair, I think, I was, to answer your question indirectly, I was at a conference with some research professionals recently, and I asked one of my colleagues there, I said, what are you doing with the pandemic year data? Like, how are you explaining that and incorporating that into your reports and charts? And they were kind of kidding, but they were like, we're not using it because it's so different. The trends that were present during the pandemic were just so different than any other trends, and they're hard to explain, and they're kind of erratic, I would almost say. So yes, anything you see in the 2020, 2021 period is going to be something, usually that's going to be a blip in the chart. It's going to be a disconnect in the trends that you saw before and after. And, you know, to sort of delve into that and understand it all and explain it all, I don't know if we ever will be able to sufficiently.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so then another issue that I know is of interest is and has been spoken about, so I'm not going to dwell on this too long, but we are looking at the time to disposition. And so the commission has been analyzing the court case data to see how long these dispositions are taking, whether the case is disposed with an acquittal, a conviction or a dismissal. How long did that take from the point of filing until the judgment? And we do see, actually, as you heard this morning, a decrease in the amount of time it's taking to resolve these cases. Another thing that I think it's important to point out that actually also you heard in a different way this morning is, if you look at some information that we have here, we went into court file cases and we counted up the number of hearings that were continued in each case. If you look at that chart at the bottom, or that table rather at the bottom, you'll see that, you know, most of the cases do not are in the fewer than 10 continuance range. And there's a small number that are up pretty high in the over 30 or 21 to 30. And those are outliers. I mean, we are not happy with that. I don't think anyone is happy with that. But this is kind of those cases that have like really a lot more continuances than other cases. They're not a large percentage of everything that the court's resolving. And they do tend to drag the mean and median down. So that's how numbers work. Like if you've got a lot of things in the 0 to 10 range, but then a few things that are like way, way longer than that, it's going to drag that down. So that's just something to keep in mind when we're thinking about, you know, the majority of cases that go through the system. And this is another way, just another way of kind of looking at that. This chart shows, and I'm not going to go through the numbers, but the, for felonies, the mean and the median, and it also, you'll notice there's, so the mean is the average, and then the median is the midpoint, and you'll notice that those are pretty different in some cases, and that's because of what I was talking about, that you may have some cases that are just really taking, a few cases that are taking a really long time, and they're dragging that mean out to the end of the scale. So then the case gets resolved, and if the person is convicted, they receive a sentence. And looking at sentencing, this is just an illustration. I chose B felonies are not, there's not that many of them, but C felonies, as I mentioned, are, there's a large volume of C felonies. The mean active sentences that people, that convicted defendants are receiving have actually been increasing. You can see in that chart right there. Not by a lot, but they have been going up, and that's something to keep an eye on, because that has implications for the Department of Corrections and you know, all kinds of downstream implications in the criminal justice system.
But in terms of the sentencing, would that mean active sentence increasing? Any sense of what factors are leading to that increase?
I actually was looking into that to the chair. I was looking into that the other day. I do think that some of it was driven by maybe statutory changes, and there may be other things as well that I haven't hit on yet. And I also should say about this slide, this is not the amount of time that people spend in incarcerated. This is what they are sentenced to. So we all know, so I will say, just remind folks that, you know, there is good time that people are given under statute. People can be paroled. So I don't want to give the idea that this is the amount of time. This is the sentence that's given at the end of the case. All right, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about recidivism. That's one of the things that the commission spends a lot of time analyzing and looking at. And so, and it's a complicated topic, and I probably won't be able to do it justice here. But I do want to first say that it's really this, the idea of recidivism is, you know, how often do people who've been through the criminal justice system return to the criminal justice system? That's sort of like the broadest brush way of thinking about it. And then you get into the details, and it can get quite complicated. But the commission uses a definition of recidivism when it does its calculations that's in statute, and it's down at the bottom there. So first of all, who are we looking at? We're looking at previously convicted people. So this is people who have been convicted of a crime. And then we follow them, you know, metaphorically speaking, for 3 years following their date of conviction or release from incarceration, whichever is later. And we see whether they are booked into or are otherwise returned to a correctional facility. Couple of things about this. First of all, previously convicted individuals in this definition include both people convicted of felonies and misdemeanors. So it's important to think about, like, who are we looking at? We're looking at really people convicted of felonies and misdemeanors. Second of all, we're following people who may not have been incarcerated. So it is, some people can be convicted of a crime and receive a probationary sentence. And they may not, so they may be charged and convicted and have never gone to prison. Well, we're still following those people, but they never touched the Department of Corrections, metaphorically speaking. So that's another thing to consider in our definition. So we're following all those people. And then finally, we're looking at people who really come back to a correctional facility either for anything, they could be charged with a new crime, but they might not be convicted of that crime, or they could be charged with the new crime, brought back into a correctional facility and convicted of that crime, and then serve a sentence. So that's the sort of the universe of people we're looking at, which is a very specific cohort. And so, and we do divide people into cohorts because we can only measure their recidivism every 3 years, right? Because we have to wait for that 3-year period. So it gets a little technical, but here basically is a sort of a one chart depiction of the recidivism rates of people in the different cohorts that we've been looking at. And that's pretty consistent, so that you do like to see that. Some of them are, you know, a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but they're all sort of in that range.
Does the fact that the purple line, which is the 2022 number, is generally below the other three numbers, does that suggest that we are improving and having less recidivism?
To the chair, that is one hypothesis. But remember when I said, like, lots of cases get dismissed? So we're counting people who come back, but we're counting also people who maybe are convicted as well. And so if you get charged but never convicted, you wouldn't have, and you never come back to a correctional facility, we wouldn't count you as having failed. And so that also could be playing into that line. And of course, it's that tricky 2022 cohort, right?
And then the second follow up on that is that the line rises quickly and then levels out fairly soon. What does that suggest in terms of when the greatest number of people who recidivate?
Oh, to the chair.
Do recidivate.
Yeah, thank you. I that was something I wanted to mention. I forgot. Thank you. So interestingly, as you can see from this chart, the rate of recidivism is the strongest immediately after we start measuring. And so people really, if they're going to fail, they usually fail right away. And there's some, you know, that is something really to think about, because it's a little counterintuitive, at least to me. I think to myself, if I had just been convicted or had just come out of a correctional facility, I think I'd be pretty motivated to not get in trouble again. But that's not what the data show. And so these are people, you know, that is something to think about. You know, could there be some other way of interacting with those folks during that most at-risk period, which is right after the event?
So I'm in this interesting place in which I have a Senate bill. I'm up in Senate Finance momentarily.
Oh, well, we're done.
And so I think we have one slide left, but I'll leave it to the other members of the committee. We can start with a 30-minute break and come back and have discussion after that if you'd like, or we can recess for the day and get her back on the phone today.
Oh, whenever we get back, so we can talk.
Yeah. Okay. But come back today in 30 minutes?
No, I think come back.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
So what we are going to do, we are going to adjourn for the day. Mm-hmm. We will reschedule for you to come back. I expect at that point you won't be in person. You'll be on the phone or on Teams or Zoom or whatever the technology is. But we will reschedule for the future to continue this. And at that time, we'll also ask specifically that you provide some additional information on probation and parole statistics. So with that, we are going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting will be Monday, February 16 at 1:30. Our meeting on Friday, February 13 is canceled, and we stand adjourned. The time is now 2:02 p.m.